From President Barack Obama's visit to rumors surrounding Hank the ballpark pup, it was a busy week here in Milwaukee. We'll break down some of the biggest news in this week's Behind the Headlines podcast from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Thanks for tuning in today. Later in today's show, we'll take a look at Shakespeare's significance. This year marks the 400th year since his death, and there are quite a few local events happening to celebrate his work. Book editor Jim Higgins has the latest. We'll also hear from Packers beat writers Bob McGinn and Michael Cohen with the latest from the NFL scouting combine. In news, political reporter Craig Gilbert has a story in today's paper about the big three in Wisconsin's Republican Party: Reince Priebus, Scott Walker, and Paul Ryan. Just a short while ago, those three were on top of the GOP. Now all three have been eclipsed by Donald Trump and, to a lesser degree, Ted Cruz, following a rebellion of sorts in the party. Here's Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, talking to editor Greg Borowski from the Conservative Political Action Conference earlier this week.
All right, we're joined by Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, to talk about a story he has about Governor Walker, Paul Ryan, Reince Priebus, and Donald Trump, some of the biggest figures in Republican politics today, and how their interplay is going. You know, Craig, tell us a little bit about your story and what you're focusing on.
Well, I think if you want to understand the havoc that Donald Trump is wreaking in the Republican Party and in the conservative movement right now, I mean, one way to look at it is to look at the headaches he has caused Wisconsin's Republican Big Three, the national leaders of the party that come from Wisconsin. That's Party Chairman Reince Priebus, it's the House Speaker Paul Ryan, and Governor Scott Walker. I mean, he basically helped drive Scott Walker out of the presidential race. He's been sparring with Ryan. He kind of took Reince Priebus' vision of a Republican Party that would reach out to Latinos and kind of blew that up with his position and his rhetoric on immigration. So his vision of the party turns out to be very different, I think, from the vision of these other three guys, these three guys from Wisconsin, who for a long time before Trump came along were hailed as kind of like this a new vanguard for the Republican Party. And in Wisconsin represented a very unified Republican Party, which we're not seeing at the national level in this cycle.
So what are the three that you mentioned? What do they do? I mean, Walker suggested when he got out that others should get out of the race. The race isn't that much clearer today. Reince Priebus is struggling. Ryan is speaking about what do they do to get things back on track in their minds?
Yeah, they're all in an extremely delicate and difficult position. I mean, obviously, Reince Priebus, as chairman of the party, can't be seen as taking sides. Whatever reservations he may or may not have about Donald Trump, his strategy really has been to prevent a third-party candidacy by Donald Trump, I think on the assumption that Donald Trump would not actually be the Republican nominee. Now he's in a more difficult position, but he's not going to take sides in this race. And Paul Ryan, for the same reason as the House Speaker, is in a very difficult position. He's spoken out twice now against the rhetoric of Donald Trump, but he keeps trying to remain a referee. And he's also, by the way, the chair of the convention in his official role as House Speaker. Scott Walker has, I think, more liberty to speak out if he wants to, but he's chosen not to. I mean, when he got out of the race, he actually, without mentioning Donald Trump by name, called for Republicans to clear the field against Donald Trump and get behind one single alternative. At CPAC on Thursday, he said people need to be happy warriors, not the words of someone who's coming out swinging against Donald Trump. So he's chosen not only not to attack Donald Trump explicitly, but not to endorse any of his rivals. But of the three, I think Scott Walker has the most leeway to take sides if he wants to, but he's chosen not to.
Yeah, well, when you look at the math of the delegate count and the primaries, Trump is clearly in the driver's seat. But how does he play with the, you know, the average conservative activist or voter out there? Because a lot of his positions he's been criticized are not as a true conservative. I mean, is he going to generate enough enthusiasm if he's the nominee to win, or are there other problems ahead?
Well, he definitely has. There are definitely people you talk to, Republican voters along the campaign trail, conservative activists at a gathering like CPAC, that have a huge problem with him, either his personality and his rhetoric or his politics. Some people don't think he's a true conservative. Some people don't know what he stands for. How big that group is and how much power they have, when he clearly has the most enthusiastic core of support in this field. There does tend to be kind of a rallying effect when someone gets far enough toward the nomination. There's a tipping point, and people just decide we're going to have to live with this. But we've seen, you know, among party elites and conservative elites over the last several days, people just drawing a line in the sand. You know, thinkers and thought leaders in the conservative movement, there are some who just say they will not vote for Donald Trump under any circumstances. The real question is at the grassroots level, you know, what does that mean in terms of any support from the actual Republican voting public? Is he going to lose, and will that more than offset any gains he might make among independents and Democrats as a general election candidate?
Again, that story can be found in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can also find it online at jsonline.com. For more political commentary, you can listen to our JS on Politics podcast, available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Need a way to turn down a second date? Try using Shakespeare's words. Perhaps I must discontinue your company, from much ado about nothing would suffice. Whether he was writing about love, hate, feast, or famine, Shakespeare was a master wordsmith. You can celebrate his life and his words in many ways. Here's Lou Sandoval catching up with editor Jim Higgins on some of the possibilities.
2016 marks the 400th year since the death of Shakespeare. Today, culture is very fickle. Every generation gives rise to its own slang, its own clothes, its own music, art, and philosophy. And then there's Shakespeare. What makes the works of this one late Renaissance writer still relevant today?
Well, Lou, Harold Bloom, the cultural critic, wrote a book once called Shakespeare, The Invention of the Human. And there's a sense to which he, at least in literary and dramatic terms, he created what it means to be human on stage. And his plays really focus on language. You know, in his own time, they weren't high production values. They could be staged in simple rooms. Props were simple. It counted on the audience to use their imagination to move from place to place. So it's the language and the relations and the conflicts between people that mattered most. And that's something that can be easily adapted to any era. Like in Chicago right now, we have not only a production of Othello set in contemporary times, but a hip-hop remix of Othello. But the basic idea of Othello, insecurity and jealousy and mistrust, translates across all generations.
And the fact that he translates so well into all these different generations of people over the years brings us to another point. The American Players Theater alum Deborah Staples is going to star in an Illinois Shakespeare Festival production of Hamlet this summer, and she's going to star as Hamlet. What can you tell us about the history of casting a female in this particular role, and why Miss Staples?
Well, Hamlet is one of the great roles in Shakespeare, partly because that character gets to say and do so much. There is a long tradition of actresses taking on Hamlet. Probably the most famous one is Sandra Bernhardt, the early 20th century actress who played Hamlet both on stage and in the movies. Hamlet is a youth, and so it's easy to see a woman playing a young man if you want to take it that way. There also have been conceptual productions, and one took place at UW Parkside a few years ago, where Gail Childs Daly, the director, cast four different actors, men and women, as Hamlet. These were college student actors. She kind of broke the script up into four different parts. So one was Hamlet the lover, Hamlet the warrior, Hamlet the thinker, and gave the idea of a divided person, which certainly is in Hamlet, and also gave four people a chance to take on some of this role rather than have one do it and three watch. With Deb, she's a classically trained actress. She can probably do just about anything on stage. It's interesting. 2 years ago at Illinois Shakes, she played Elizabeth Rex. She was playing Queen Elizabeth, the famous virgin queen of Shakespeare's time, who had to rule like a man and to some extent modeled what she did after the male right of kings. So it's kind of a natural leap for Deb to go from that on to Hamlet. And my questions, you know, which will be answered by your performance, are not so much about a woman playing a man. It's about a middle-aged woman playing a youth. I think that's the trickier part. And when we see things like Mel Gibson playing Hamlet, who was probably a teenager or maybe 20, that's maybe the harder gap to leap with belief. But it'll be really fun to see what Deb can do in the part.
And speaking of seeing the plays locally, what can people do to join in the Shakespeare 400 celebration?
Sure. I'm going to turn to my list here, Lou, because there's a lot going on in Milwaukee. Right now, this weekend, Off the Wall Theater is opening its production of Hamlet. It uses about 10 actors playing a variety of multiple parts, and that's in a very small theater. That's about the size of a coffee house, so it'll be a really intimate view of Hamlet. American Players Theater in Spring Green, we have one of the best classically trained groups in the company. We'll be able to see several Shakespeare plays. This summer, there'll be the return of the Summit Players, who they're young Marquette grads who go around a different county park, or excuse me, Wisconsin state parks, and perform free versions of Shakespeare's plays. And Optimus Theater will be doing Julius Caesar in the theater near the Children's Outing Association. So just keep watching your Journal Sentinel or tapmilwaukee.com. There's a lot of Shakespeare you can see between now and Labor Day.
Well, that's a great list, Jim. Thanks very much for sharing the information with us. And thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Lou.
Our freelance theater writer has a column about Shakespeare in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find that online at tapmilwaukee.com. I can say from experience that living 2 miles away from work is pretty nice. And I'm not alone in thinking that. In fact, millennial workers are a key force behind a new downtown Milwaukee project. The Lackey & Joy's building on Water Street is near some big apartment and condo complexes, and the nightlife on Water and Brady Streets. It's the kind of location that appeals to young workers who want to live, work, and play in the same part of town. Jim Nelson talked with business reporter Tom Dakin about the project.
I'm here with Tom Dakin, business reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and we're talking about a new downtown project. Tom, tell us what's going on with the new project at the former Lackey & Joy's building on Water Street.
Yeah, Jim. Developer Stuart Wongard plans to tear down part of the former Lackey & Joy's building and build an addition to the rest of the building that will be renovated. And he'll create an office building with about 120,000 square feet. And what's interesting, one of the things that's interesting about this project is Mr. Wongard says he already has his tenants largely lined up, including a couple possible anchor tenants. And he said all of these prospective tenants are Milwaukee area businesses located in the suburbs that are considering a move or want to move to downtown.
Tom, do we know who those businesses are?
Well, a commercial real estate source tells us that the two prospective anchors are Bader Rutter, which is a business marketing agency that's located out in Brookfield, and then Masterlock, a longtime Milwaukee industrial company that has its headquarters in Oak Creek near Mitchell International Airport.
And why are they interested in coming downtown Milwaukee?
Well, according to Stu Wongard, who, by the way, would not comment on who his anchors are, but according to Mr. Wongard, the tenants that are interested in this building want to move downtown in part because they want to keep their young professional workforce happy. And these are the millennials, those people who are in their 20s and 30s, who increasingly want to live downtown and also want to work downtown.
That site is what makes that site so appealing for those who aren't familiar with the site? What's so great about the old Lackey & Joy site?
Well, if you're a millennial and if you want to work downtown and you want to live downtown, the Lackey & Joy site is within walking distance of several new downtown apartment buildings, including some that are currently under construction. If you think going north of Water Street, you have Barry Mandel's project, the North End, which keeps expanding. You have another development that Tim Guckman and Jim Wickman are building called The Rhythm. You have new apartments in the Park East that Wongard has developed and plans to add on to those apartments as well. So you have the ability to walk or bike to your workplace.
And it's also along the river.
Well, along the river, which is nice. I mean, that's always a scenic aspect to any office development, but it's also within walking distance of a lot of restaurants and taverns and the kind of places where you would go for lunch and maybe go to after work. A lot of millennials like to have that. I suppose a lot of people in general like to have that, but people in their 20s and 30s particularly have an affinity for those types of things.
It's really kind of equidistance from the Water Street Business and Entertainment District and the Brady Street area, you know, sort of in that sweet spot as far as a place to work.
Yeah.
What are some of the concerns that that millennials might have about that location? I know you mentioned parking.
Yeah, millennials, like the rest of us, rate having affordable, convenient parking really high when it comes to the factors that they say make up in an ideal workplace. And, of course, when you're in the suburbs, if you're in Oak Creek or if you're in Brookfield, affordable parking is easy if you're an employer. You just have a surface parking lot, and that's where your employees park. When you come downtown, obviously, by the nature of an urban location, your sites are more restricted. So in some cases, you have to have a multi-level parking deck, which raises the costs for the employer that the employer might pass on to the employee. In the case of the Lacking Joy site, there will be underground parking as part of that development. And other downtown workplaces that have been, or excuse me, downtown office developments that have been successful in attracting some of these businesses lately from the suburbs, such as Schlitz Park, which is just across the river from where Lacking Joy's is located. Schlitz Park has a couple parking decks that are more low-rise parking decks, like one or two levels, and they have a lot of surface parking there as well. So it hasn't really been a problem at that particular location.
But there's been a couple of other ideas proposed for that site. Do you think this one is this the one that's going to happen?
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to happen. I mean, you've got a developer here who's done a lot of projects for a long time. He's well capitalized and appears to have the demand available for being able to then go out and get financing for the project. And again, it's part of this long-term trend. You do have a fair number of firms in Milwaukee and other cities that are moving from the suburbs to downtown, in part to keep the millennials happy. You also have firms already located downtown that choose to expand here. And the most obvious example is Northwestern Mutual. I mean, the biggest downtown office project right now is that 32-story tower that won't be done until the end of 2017. But Northwestern Mutual made that decision in part for purposes of workforce retention and attraction, including people in their 20s and 30s.
Important part of our economy downtown, isn't it?
Sure is.
For more on Tom's story, pick up today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And as with other stories, you can find it online at jsonline.com. Milwaukee Public Schools and its students can, in James Causey's opinion, receive unjust criticism. That's part of the reason why he wanted to write the column he has out today. Here's David Haynes talking to James Causey.
This is Dave Haynes, opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I'm joined by columnist James Causey. James, you have a really interesting column this week about a pretty extraordinary young woman from Milwaukee Public Schools. Why don't you tell us what you came up with?
Yeah, the student is she's a senior at North Division High School, and her name is Shatara Mitchell. She's a track star. And her story is more than about track, but let me tell you a little bit about her prowess on the track and field. She started running as a freshman on a track team, and so I talk about her first experience running. She did a 55-meter dash and a pair of Air Force Ones, and if you know anything about those shoes, they're really clunky shoes.
It's like basketball shoes, right?
Yeah.
She didn't have track shoes.
She couldn't afford track shoes.
And how'd she do in that first race?
She won her race.
And she won it. Yeah.
And so her story goes on like this. As last year, her junior year, she won the 400-meter dash at state. In Division II, and she's one of the fastest girls in Division II right now across the country. She has more than two dozen scholarship offers to run across the country, but she's faced with this tough decision. Do you go and leave your family behind and pursue your dreams, or do you stick closer to home?
And there's something more to this story, too, right, James?
Yeah, the thing that's important is that she also dealt with something that nearly 4,000 students in NPS are dealing with on a yearly basis. She was homeless for about a month and a half. The way she explains it is that her house was boarded up because of electrical problems. And, you know, even if you're just homeless for one day or homeless for a month or two, being homeless could send your family through a lot of turmoil. And she explained what she had to go through and what her family went through during that process. It was very tough for her.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's really tough. And you write in a column about the influence of her parents, her father in particular, and also her coach. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because even when she was making strides her freshman and sophomore year on track and in basketball, too, she's also a basketball star, her father saw that her grades started to slip. So he pulled her off the track team during her sophomore year, and that was a wake-up call for her because she decided, hey, I got to really focus on academics because – according to her father, it's all about education. He wants his daughter to be educated, and it's not about track and field. It's not about basketball or anything else. Don't get me wrong. Those things could get you there, but he wants her to really focus on her grades.
And her grades slipped, but it's not like she was getting C's or D's, right?
No. The funny part is she went from a 3.0 to like a 2.8. And
right.
Pulled her off the team, and she's currently ranked among the top 5 or 10% of her class right now. So she's a phenomenal student.
What about her coach?
Her coach is her basketball coach is the one who really kind of told me about all the things that she was dealing with. And I got to give him credit. He was very observant. When she was playing basketball, he said she was usually the first person there and the last person to leave. But during basketball season, he noticed it was a period of time where, you know, she just wasn't showing up at all. So he took it upon himself to go by her house. And when he went by there, he saw that the house was boarded up and that it was a trailer in front. And he basically told me that, you know, a lot of students are dealing with a lot of things and they just don't really tell you about it. So, you know, a lot of people like to focus on kids being bad, kids having behavioral issues and things like that. But what a lot of people don't understand that these kids and a lot of kids in NPS deal with a lot of issues. And it's best to try to get to understand a student and find out what they're going through before we make judgments.
Yeah, you bet. And what I like about the story is that she's an extraordinary young woman who has a great future in front of her. But think about what her father and her mother and this coach did to help get her there. And I just think it's a great story. James, thanks for telling it.
Thank you.
The column from James is incredibly moving. If you're interested in reading it, you can find it in today's Crossroads section and online at jsonline.com. In their Packers podcast, JS beat writers Bob McGinn and Michael Cohen reported on the NFL scouting combine they attended recently in Indianapolis. Among the topics were what Packers GM Ted Thompson and coach Mike McCarthy had to say about molding the roster this offseason.
All right, well, now let's jump into what we were actually supposed to be in Indianapolis for, and that was obviously the scouting combine. The highlight of which was, some lengthy periods of time to talk to McCarthy and also a rare press conference by GM Ted Thompson. What'd you take away from what Ted had to say? We really hadn't heard from him since, the first week of September?
I believe that's true. That's his last group interview.
Yeah.
So that's 6 months, huh?
Yeah.
And he was in very good form. He had he appeared at a podium. All these NFL GMs and coaches come in Thursday and Friday. Wednesday and Thursday. Sometimes for 15-minute slot. Sometimes they have it a half-hour slot. He was in good spirits. He chatted about pretty much everything. He made his first comments about the season. He thinks they're well-positioned for the future. What am I supposed to say? Well-positioned going forward?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in the future, and what do you say about that? I think we're a solid team. We've got good players at places that you need good players. I don't think we have a lot of weaknesses, so I think we're going to be a competitive team for some time to come. So Ted, the 63-year-old Thompson, will enter the season with McCarthy as the only coach he's hired, and a franchise quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, 32. So much of the discussion then turned to what he's going to do with his roster. And what did he say about that, Mike?
Well, basically, he sort of reinforced his draft and develop philosophy. There were a lot of questions about whether the draft and develop philosophy is sort of it has merit in that it will continuously keep the Packers competitive, but some people wondered if it prevents them from getting over the top. In other words, is having so much youth on the roster beneficial for years to come? But in the interim, when other teams are signing free agents and things like that, is it holding them back from getting over that hump and winning another Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers? And, some of those same questions were posed to Mike McCarthy as well. But what I took away from Ted Thompson was basically that, he took it all in good humor. But, I mean, he was pretty forceful and said, I'm going to do what I do. And we're not going to change. And people can think whatever they want. But what we do has won football games, and it will continue to win football games. That was sort of my takeaway.
There was a question or two about, the Packers are in the playoffs 7 straight years, blah, blah, blah. And then the questions turned to, why aren't you more active in free agency? And Ted said, hey, it doesn't make any sense to me. Everybody's talking about how we've been in position to be fairly successful for some time, but you can't do that if you're changing all the time. Then he said, we're going to be active in free agency. We sign free agents. We look at it. But I guess the key line, Mike, was no, we're not going to chase ghosts because we think the clock is ticking.
Yeah, that was definitely the line of the day from Ted, basically saying that they're not just going to go out and sign guys simply because Aaron Rodgers is getting older or that proverbial window of opportunity, which is interesting because he said just because we think the clock is ticking, that was essentially another way of discussing a window of opportunity. And anytime those phrases came up about the right window, the window being open, McCarthy and Thompson both shot them down. So I thought it was interesting that he shot down those inquiries, but then used similar language on his own in another scenario.
So Ted appeared first, spoke for 15 minutes at the podium, and then another 10 outside with about 15 reporters gathered around. And then McCarthy came up about half hour later, did the podium deal for 15 minutes. Did he spoke out in the hallway? Or
just the TV reporters, because then we had that lunch later that day.
Went down to a sports bar in downtown Indy. Beat writers were welcome. He spoke for about an hour there, right?
Yep, about an hour.
And then when the window came up there, McCarthy said, this window stuff, I don't look at it that way, and I don't buy into it. I'm not really interested in, okay, let's be competitive for the next however many years. That's not the way I'm wired. I stand up in front of our football team and demand excellence. These are the things we feel we need to do to win a championship. And I would like to think everybody in the building is going about it the right way. We're pouring everything we've got into this year, regardless of who we sign and how we draft or how it all goes about. But you can't sell the farm out. You got to be smart when you get into that free agent market. We'll see how it shakes out. We might shock you this year.
What do you think? Was it a joke? Was it him being sarcastic? Was he being serious that maybe they do plan to dip a little bit more into the market? What do you think?
I have no idea.
It's
right now,
to
I do
say.
Not have an idea. So,
but I did think it was interesting. He seemed more interested in competing in the interim than being good for years to come. That was sort of what I kind of took away from it. Ted Thompson was more about building, having good players for a long time. McCarthy, to me anyway, seemed more focused on winning now. What do you think?
Well, as recently as 5 to 6 weeks ago, I know he was fed up with the way the thing had been handled, the in-season changes to the roster, the lack of moves in that offseason. I mean, the best veteran they signed all last year before the Jones thing in September was Matt Blanchard.
Yeah.
That's a good signing.
Didn't make it through the first round of cuts.
Matt Blanchard. Matt's back with the Bears, isn't he? Yeah.
That I don't know.
Yeah, he got signed in January as a futures guy. Thompson's his boss. And I don't know. Nothing really changes within the heart, but what you say publicly might be different.
You can listen to the entire podcast at jsonline.com/PackersPodcast, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And visit our Packers section online at jsonline.com/Packers for complete coverage leading into free agency and the NFL draft in the coming months. And that does it for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, I'm your host, Katie O'Connell. Tune in next week for more behind-the-headlines information from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.